The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
The death has taken place of the convicted killer Catherine Nevin. Joining us in studio from my production team is Dermot Doyle, who once was with the Sunday Tribune newspaper and who spent every day at the court hearing for her conviction of the murder of her husband, Tom Nevin. Dermot, why did Catherine Nevin capture the imagination of Ireland back, how long ago is it now, nearly 20 years ago?
2000, the first 3 or 4 months of the year 2000, she was in court for a murder that she committed in over the bank holiday weekend in March, the Patrick's weekend in 1996. So we're talking basically 18 years. In April, she went to Mountjoy, and as we know, she died last night.
Now, tell us a little bit about that. It was a bit of time between the actual death of her husband, Tom Nevin, and her conviction 4 years later. So tell us a little bit about what is known to have happened on the night that he died.
Well, basically what happened the night that he died was that the pub, Jack White's,
near British Bay in
Wicklow. British Bay, which Catherine ran with Tom, basically an intruder broke in. According to Catherine, he tied her up and then basically shot Tom. Now, the case against her took a while to come to court. Obviously, it was 3 or 4 years before it came to court. It was entirely circumstantial. There was never a gun or a murder weapon or anything put in Catherine Evans' hand. But basically, once...
And it wasn't alleged, was it, that she actually fired the shot, that somebody else had actually did it and then tied her up to make
exactly,
it look like it was a break-in.
Yeah. So basically, she was convicted of two things. She was convicted of murder, which was also convicted separately of soliciting three men over a period of time to kill Tom. So when you put all those things together, and I remember one day Peter Charlton, who's now Disclosures Tribunal, that was the prosecuting, main prosecuting barrister. And one day when the jury was gone home, it was legal argument, and he went through, I think, 24 or 25 pieces of circumstantial evidence against her. And I think up to that point, I thought maybe she has a case. But when I heard that, I realised prosecution was going to win. She had definitely done it.
When he laid out all
every single piece, it was just incredible. For example, I mean, even simple things like when the guards came to Jack White's that night, her, say, wrists were bound, and one kind of junior guard went over and basically lifted the ribbons off her hand. Like, there was no serious attempt made to tie her up at all. So little things like that kept cropping up in the course of the investigation. And as it went on, and as they investigated, and they came across these three men who said that she had asked them to kill Tom, they realised she'd been trying to get rid of Tom for a long time.
And the Gardaí were immediately suspicious of her, the Gardaí that were called, but they were also worried because there was a history of bad blood between certain Gardaí and her at the pub, but also she was believed to have more special relationship with more senior Gardaí.
Yeah, there was one particular senior guard, Tom Kennedy, who she was very good friends with. I mean, Catherine was a social climber, so she would have loved senior guards, but not so much junior guards. So she kind of gave them a hard time. She accused them of this, that and the other. Guards were transferred out of the area because of rows that she had with them. Tom was different. He denied in court that he had had an affair with her, but the local assumption was, and the assumption certainly in court was, that they had had a very close friendship. To put it more strongly than that, he was asked in court whether he had had an affair with her, and he denied it.
As indeed was a local judge as well.
Yeah, I mean, one of the fascinating things about the case, and one of the reasons it kind of gripped the country, was that it very quickly became more than just a kind of an ordinary murder case. It wasn't just a case of a wife who killed her husband for the money, which is basically what happened. There was a whole lot of other elements to it. One was that she had a relationship with a circuit court judge, Donico Bukala. Now, if you can imagine today in court, if a defence barrister called a judge as a witness and asked him, had he had an affair?
Which, of course, we should say that he denied.
Which he also denied. But it was that kind of, every kind of week there was something kind of more and more sensational would kind of creep into the case. With the sex element to it, because the guards at the prosecution, they said that they weren't trying to kind of suggest any kind of moral kind of deficit in Catherine. What they were trying to do was prove that she was a liar. And she was a practiced and sometimes convincing and sometimes not so convincing liar.
But hang on, where did she manage then to find these three men that she solicited to kill her husband?
Well, this is the other kind of aspect of it. I mean, before we came on air, I kind of flippantly described the case as one that was about sex and terrorism. We've touched briefly on the sex element of it, but there was a huge IRA aspect to the case as well, which is where it really got fascinating. Before they went to Jack White's, Catherine and Tom had run a pub called the Barry House, formerly known as the Kappa House in Finglas. It was a Republican pub, special branch were all over it all the time. It was frequented by very senior Republicans, Carl Goulding, Joe Cal, names like that would have been there. So
these are big IRA figures of the 1970s.
Yeah. And one of the things that you have to remember about the trial was that it happened in early 2000, which was less than 2 years after the Good Friday Agreement. So Northern Ireland wasn't as settled as it was now. So there was still memory, very recent memory of terrorism and what the IRA could get up to. So the idea that this defendant who ran a pub in Finglas had IRA connections was another kind of twist to it. So two of the three people that she solicited to kill Tom had IRA connections. There was Jerry Heaps, who had served 7 or 8 years on the IRA wing in Portlaoise prison for terrorist offences. And there was a Sinn Féin member who wasn't involved in any kind of terrorist actions himself, but he had gone bail, I think, for Desi Ellis, the current Sinn Féin TD, when Desi had problem with explosive offences as well. So she knew where to go if she wanted somebody, you know, who
and
might know.
And these men all gave evidence have been solicited by her, did they, or did they deny it?
No, they all came into court and they all swore an evidence, an oath that they'd been asked by Catherine to kill Tom. Jerry Heaps came up with 10 different examples in court of various scenarios that Catherine had come up with where Tom would be alone and Jerry might be able to shoot him. There was one suggesting that he drove through the Phoenix Park frequently on his own. So if Jerry Heaps was up for it, he might be able to shoot him down there. So Jerry Heaps kind of said he knocked her back 9 or 10 times and every single time she bounced back with another idea.
Okay, tell us a little bit about how she deported herself during the trial, because there was a lot of comment about how she continued to socialise after the death, how she seemed not to be particularly upset by Tom Nevin's death the night of his murder, when people would have expected her to be deeply shocked. But in the court, there was an awful lot of fascination for the way that she carried on.
There was. I mean, I had a slight amount of sympathy for her. This, I mean, it's the only trial I've ever seen where the judge, after a while, asked or told, instructed the media not to comment on her appearance anymore. Every time she came to court, every day she had a different suit on. It was pretty much a kind of the same suit every day. It was just, you know,
just a different
color.
One.
Yeah.
Which led to sort of Imelda Marcos comparisons.
Yeah. There was a lot of talk about her shoes and the number of shoes that she had. Kind of, she got her hair done every day before she came into court. She wore lots of expensive jewellery. She wore a wedding ring very prominently because obviously she needed to give the impression that she kind of sympathised the death of her husband. But her appearance became a huge topic of conversation for a while. She became a massive object of fascination, and her appearance was just one of many reasons why the case became, you know, the most talked about case at the time, I would say, in the history of the country.
It did. Who dubbed her the Black Widow?
I'm not sure precisely who did, but she very quickly became the Black Widow. I'd say in the first day or before, once she was charged, she became the Black Widow.
And she stayed in prison until quite recently when she was released because of ill health, but I think released into care.
She was released into care. I mean, she would have been 18 years in prison this April. So she would have been probably coming towards the end of her time in jail anyway, although to her dying breath, she maintained that she had never done it and that she was innocent, which would have told against her kind of getting out early. But she became ill last year with a brain tumour and it was decided to let her out, basically to go to hospice care to be looked after.
And to finish, Dermot Doyle, having sat through every single day of the court hearing, did you believe she was guilty?
Oh, 100%. There's no question about it.
Dermot Doyle, thank you very much for joining us here on The Last Word on Today FM.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.